Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. Really? Merry Christmas? Is that the deal? Does it feel merry to you right now? Here, Christmas in the good old U.S. of A. Why are you handing me a K-cup when I want a cup of coffee? Because the trash is over there. Okay, just dealing with a little business here in radio land. Good to be back from California. It's beautiful out there. Beautiful coast. Wonderful people. Rob McCoy, Pastor Rob McCoy. You may have heard him on Friday. We did the show from his church, which was awesome, and a wonderful church service. I've never seen so many Trump flags outside of a church in my life, but that was one of the reasons. I think they've moved from 400 people to 1,500 people because Rob McCoy at Godspeed Calvary Chapel is one of the few churches out there that's willing to open. So they're continuing to rack up the fines and telling the governor to take a flying leap because they feel compelled, not only as Christians, but as Americans, to defy that order as inherently not only unbiblical, but also unconstitutional, if that document matters anymore. And so they're meeting, and God's just bringing all kinds of people to their church. It was a wonderful service on Sunday. And Rob did a great job of kind of tying in Genesis 1 to a Christmas message. And it was powerful. And it's just really great to be out there. We saw our son who now lives in San Francisco, and beautiful weather. Of course, I mean, you got to wear the mask like all the time. And to see all these businesses shuttered, it's just brutal. Just brutal what's going on all over this country. And but hey, at least we solved the flu. Because if you've noticed, the flu season is about 1/50th of what it was last year, the flu season, 1/50th of what it was. CDC flu view comparison for week number 49. This is from the CDC flu view archives. And it's about 1/50th. 1/50th of what it was a year ago. So thank you, COVID. Of course, we can't thank President Trump for anything anymore. That's just against the law, apparently. But thank you, COVID, for apparently solving the flu epidemic. Here's another one. Justin Hart, who I follow on Twitter, brilliant guy. 75% of confirmed cases of COVID-19 come from domestic transmission. What? Domestic, does that mean here in America? No. That means at home. 75% of confirmed cases, this is from more CDC information and a couple other places, comes from home. So that would make this interesting. My friend Caroline on Facebook, a local high school here. Millbrook High School is now requiring their students in choir. I mean, I can't scream. I can't use expletives. And I don't want to cry. So I'm just choosing to kind of laugh. Okay, if you want to know what's going on here. Millbrook High School is now requiring their students in choir to wear a mask when singing.
God bless America.
Yep, sounds great. Also, for any students who play wind instruments, you'll be required to wear a mask with a hole cut out of it for your mouth to fit through so you can play your instrument. Okay, excellent. More sanity. Speaking of sanity, Bill Gates, worth nearly $120 billion, advocates for keeping some businesses closed during the pandemic during a CNN interview on Sunday. Yeah, got to keep those bars and restaurants closed because, you know, 75% of COVID spread comes domestically, meaning not at bars and restaurants. And in New York, it was recently discovered that COVID spread in New York attributed to bars and restaurants, places like that, you know, evil places like that with evil rich owners. Only 2% of COVID cases. So let's shut all those places down. Gates, who's worth $118 billion, is one of the top four richest people in the world. He told CNN's Jake Tapper that he thinks it's appropriate for bars and restaurants in most of the country to be closed. More than 110,000 restaurants have closed permanently or long-term across the country as the industry grapples with the devastating impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, Bloomberg News reported. But when you're worth $118 billion, what do you care? You don't. So apparently Bill Gates doesn't give a rip about this story. This is from Fox Business. Single Michigan mother of six fined $1,000 per day for keeping cafe open. Michigan's health department is fining a mother of $6,000 per day for keeping her cafe open in violation of stay-at-home orders issued November 15th. Amy Hyken, the owner of Cafe Rosetta in Calumet, is refusing to pay multiple $1,000 fines for keeping her cafe door open. And Amy's just got this sweet disposition. She doesn't want to fight anybody. This is a guy that's leading another group. They're all businesses essentials, the name of his group. She doesn't want any of this. She was divorced 9 years ago from a rough situation. She's got six kids. She was on welfare, nowhere to go, he said. So this girl decides to pick herself up. Her brother decides to help her. They buy Cafe Rosetta. Now Amy has a place to focus her energy positively. She loves baking. She's the sweetest thing you've ever met. Cafe Rosetta employs 30 people. 30 people, Bill Gates. Another 30 that don't matter to you, or pretty much everybody behind the lockdowns and the shutdowns, just don't care. But why would I expect anything different? Because you're pro-choice, too. Hyken can't afford to close indoor dining, Coulihan said. That's the guy with the other group. He added that she can't wear a mask in line with her doctor's orders due to a thyroid condition. Oh, who cares about that? So she stayed open and defied the mandate, he said. Now she's getting harassed on a daily basis by our local health department led by Tanya Rule and being fined $1,000 a day for supporting a family of six and 30 employees. This is where we're at. This is where we're at. Let's see, what else? I've just been swimming in this garbage. Are you going to pay my rent? California restaurant owner explodes at health department workers, citing him for defying the closure order. My calling is to all other restaurant owners to open your restaurants. If we all open up, they can't do anything. Oh, imagine that. What a great idea. We actually ate pizza place on Sunday night with Pastor Rick from Godspeed Calvary Chapel out there in California. And we specifically went to this restaurant because the church, Godspeed Calvary Chapel with Rob McCoy, lets their congregation know who's open. Well, why would they do that? So they can go there and get COVID? No. So they can go there and spend their money and reward and support these people who are courageous, yes, but desperate. You care about your neighbor? You wear your mask because you care about your neighbor? Do you care about your neighbor and their business? Do you care about their employees and their families? Do you care about anybody other than yourself? Or do you have $118 billion tucked away like Bill Gates and you can tell them all to take a flying leap? This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Merry Christmas. Hope you're doing okay. Challenging right now, isn't it? Very challenging. So many things to be concerned with. COVID-19, but at least the flu's gone. Praise the Lord for that. Thank you, COVID-19. So the flu's gone, apparently. And Thermoflu, like I read an article earlier today where this is Steve Noble, by the way. Welcome back to the show. TheSteveNobleShow.com, anywhere you get your podcasts. You can check it out there. You can go to Facebook and join us right here in the awesome studio. Monday through Friday, generally, unless I'm on the road, which I was yesterday, which is why you heard a best of show. I was live from Godspeed Calvary Chapel with our friend, Pastor Rob McCoy, one of the few pastors in California standing firm and telling the government to take a flying leap. And he's got people overflowing his church now. They've gone from about 1,400 to about 400 to about 1,500. And three services, and the place was just packed and overflow and everything, which God is blessing them for their courageous stand. And all that going on, then, of course, you have the situation with the election tampering, election fraud, what's going on there, 50 cases shot down, the Supreme Court shot down the Texas suit. Then you had the electors vote in their respective states yesterday. Several of the battleground states, the Republicans got together and went ahead and voted. The Republican electors went ahead and voted, put it on record that they voted for Trump in their respective states. But what can come of any of that? I want to talk about that. I'm going to take you through that because there is this thing still called the Constitution. There's some laws that have been passed that go back a long time, which affect what happens when they. So what happened yesterday was like in the states, but it's not really official until it's read and certified in Congress. That's what happens January 6th. Okay, so I'll explain that to you. And of course, you had Bill Barr resigning and all these things going on. I was talking about these restaurants that are going ballistic, as they should. And the one restaurant owner was talking about, hey, you know what? If we all open, what are they going to do? And that's really the only answer to all this government overreach is massive disobedience. And I was reading you that story and sharing part of that story of Bill Gates, who's worth nearly $120 billion, saying, yeah, we need to keep some of these businesses closed, you know, restaurants, bars, places like that, which in New York account for a whopping, recently found out about a little over 2% of their COVID cases. 75% are passed domestically, meaning in your house, okay, from one person to the next in your house. That's where most of the cases are being passed. And so the whole restaurant bar thing is ridiculous. And coming back from California late last night, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's sad, just heartbreaking. So there's that story. There's the mom of six who's getting fined $1,000 a day. You've got restaurant workers and owners rally in New York City. This is choking the life out of everyday people. They all got together today to protest restrictions and inaction from government officials. But the government officials there in New York, where 300,000 people, by the way, have moved out of New York City in the last 8 months. 300,000, because the crime rate, and especially violent crime, is skyrocketing because they started to get rid of entire parts of the police department that were undercover dealing with a lot of this violent crime type stuff. And those guys are gone because of this defund the police movement, which I would put in air quotes because it doesn't always mean defund them 100%, but certainly defund them significantly and rearrange how it's done. And you want to see what America would look like without the police force, just move to Portland or Seattle. You'll see it quick. Just go down to Chaz and Chop and those types of areas. You take lawlessness and human depravity, mix it all up in a bag and unleash it. And what do you get? Just go take a look. That's not a mystery. So in New York City, the mayor de Blasio, are you going to reelect this guy, by the way? I don't understand that. Restaurants need to close, but everyone should ride the subway. Indoor dining is bad. Cramped spaces traveling underground are good. New York City Mayor de Blasio said that the subways are safe and encouraged New Yorkers to use mass transit on the same day he said the city should be ready for a full shutdown after restaurants were ordered to halt indoor dining amid a surge of coronavirus cases. You've seen these restaurants where they go through elaborate trouble and expense to build these outdoor facilities with tents and all that kind of stuff. And then the government comes in and shuts them down again. For what? Because we don't have the flu anymore. We've got 1/50th of the cases we had a year ago. And COVID-19, still your probability of surviving it, if you're under 70, is 99.9%. And if you're over 70, it's 94.5%. You got a 5.5% mortality rate for people 70 over for COVID. So it's serious. I've always maintained. I know it's serious. I know it's deadly for some people. And I'm not degrading or demeaning any of that. I'm not belittling any of that. But we're talking about bringing an atom bomb to a knife fight. And in a country where we've pretty much carelessly and for profit slaughtered 61 million children since Roe versus Wade, are we really surprised by any of this, by the way? That we would not worry about the elderly, that we would not worry about people running small businesses, that we would just kind of bowl over them as this country quickly becomes an oligarchy. The United States of America is an oligarchy. Do you know what an oligarchy is? That's a government run by a very small, powerful group of people. Like, I don't know, Governor Andrew Cuomo. Here's an article from The Blaze. I'm just rapid firing a bunch of stuff at you and just, I'll bring some biblical worldview in here as well. Major news networks go silent on sexual harassment allegations against liberal darling Governor Andrew Cuomo. They go ballistic when it's a conservative or a Republican. But they got their darling Andrew Cuomo here, who I think Biden is actually kicking around the idea of making him the attorney general, which might work great unless you live in a retirement community, then not so great, right? Because that's Cuomo. That's his deal. That's on him. And he, just like his brother, is just a big blowhard. And just unbelievable, right? And you watch, assuming Biden becomes the next president, all this stuff's going to get reversed. Like this just happened. I saw an article about this or something on Twitter several days ago. Then I heard Rush talking about it today, which reminded me of it. The American Medical Association, you almost can't find this anywhere, just recently came out and said, oh, yeah, by the way, hydroxychloroquine, that's fine. Back in March, the AMA, the FDA, all these guys, because Trump said hydroxychloroquine shows great promise. No. You might as well inject bleach into your veins. It's the same basic thing going on here. And so everybody goes ballistic. And then Doctors Without Borders, remember all those folks? All those courageous doctors coming out saying hydroxychloroquine and vitamin D and a Z-Pak and all these things are really helping. But because that doesn't help the pharmaceutical companies, then that doesn't keep liberals and other Republicans as well in charge and put you under the boot of government oppression, then we can't let that narrative go. We got to shut it down. And remember, politics is involved in all of this. And behind the politics is a worldview, a spiritual truth. Whether you like it or not, eschatologically, to sound like a theological person for a second, eschatologically, don't expect some big resurgence in beauty coming out of this world before Jesus comes back. You may get a little bit here and there. You may get an uptick here and there, but the overall trajectory is down until Christ comes back. Not only down, but down and worse. Down and darker, down and more depraved, down and more sinful, down and harder to take and stomach. And we'll get to the points when we're just throwing our hands up in the air and going, I don't understand what's going on here, except you should. And Jesus himself is telling us to pay attention to the seasons. And the season is changing. All of 2020 has been a big seasonal change, not only here in America, but around the world. You got the Great Reset looming. What's going on with our election process? Do we even live in a representative republic anymore? What is your house built on? Anyway, we'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, moving through a lot of different news stories today as I climb back into the saddle. By the way, I just shared on Facebook Live when I was out at Pastor Rob McCoy's church. They've been doing these fireside chats on YouTube, which has been really, really popular. So I did one with Pastor Rick Brown, who was guest hosting. And then they kind of had some fun with that. With the Steve Noble Show took over on Friday and we did that. That's on YouTube. So I put that link on Facebook Live, but if you want to check on the Steve Noble Show page, but if you want to check that out, just go to YouTube or just Google it. Just do Fireside Chat Rob McCoy and you'll find it. Okay, that's the Godspeed Calvary Chapel channel on YouTube, and we did that on Friday. Had a very wide-ranging conversation, a lot of gospel emphasis there that I wanted to bring into it. And Sunday morning at his church, when they reminded everybody that I was in town, And Rob and I have developed a great friendship, and I was trying to help them get more support from North Carolina pastors and stuff. And he came to RFA Church here in Raleigh with Charlie Kirk. We just ended up doing a lot of things together, and God was blessing a lot of that. So they brought me up in front of the church at the 11 o'clock service on Sunday, and we just were a little back and forth for a few minutes. It was funny because if you want to keep your church service on track, let me give you a little piece of advice. Don't ask the Southern Baptist talk radio show host up in front of the church, hand him a microphone, and expect that it's going to be a 15-second interaction. All right? Don't do that. That's a really bad idea. Actually, the first time I came back from a foreign mission trip, came back from Kenya, this is before call to action and activism and stuff started. This was like 2002, and I was supposed to get up and share in front of the church for 3 to 5 minutes. I went almost 20 because God was just wrecking me on so many different levels and completely destroyed the whole church service. I had to drop some music and change this and change that. And so I guess I'm just being consistent, but go check that out. But I said in front of his church, I said a few things about us engaging politics. And I said, yes. And I know that Rob and I don't see eye to eye on everything. Okay. I don't know any two Christians that do. That's iron sharpening iron. And some things I'm sure he's right. And on some other things I'm probably right. But together we're better. Two have a better return for their work than one. The Bible teaches that. Also iron sharpening iron. So one man sharpens another. We should challenge one another. And so they're in a particular political spotlight right now. And so at one moment when we were doing our back and forth up on stage, I said, listen, politics is important, but the gospel is preeminent. And if you care more about saving America and you don't give a rip about seeing Americans saved, you've got a problem. Now there's the practical application of the gospel life, which would involve caring for your neighbor and being involved in injustice, meaning coming against it, and being concerned about unequal weights and measures and the application of God's truth and God's law to all areas of public life. That's part of the ecclesia, a broader concept of ecclesia. Well, that's just the church community. No, that can be broadened out to being the public square that we as Christians. Now, what the liberals would love, and this happened to Justin Reeder, who started Love Life, our friends at Love Life. One of the first times he went out in front of an abortion clinic in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the opposition was there, and they were telling him, listen, why don't you Christians just stay in your churches and do your thing? That's fine, which is probably a lie, but that's fine. Because when we just stay in our churches and build cafeterias and multi-purpose rooms and add on and do all this nice stuff and have the killer audio video stuff, and that's what we're accomplishing, but we don't take that kind of biblical truth out into the culture, we're not a threat to anybody. We're just good at taking care of ourselves, loving up on each other, loving up on ourselves, while the culture around us just rots. But if you're called to be salt and light, then you take the truth of God's word out into the culture, out into the ecclesia, out into the political realm. Guess what? Because God's way is best for everybody, whether they like it or not, whether they agree with it or not. God's way is best with everybody. That's why I just wrote a devotional on this earlier today. And Jesus is like, hey, if you love me, keep my commands. John 14, he said it twice. Keep his commands. Why? Just arbitrary? Because he's a control freak? No. You keep his commands because that's what's best for you. It glorifies God and it's what's best for your life. And he wants you to keep his commands because he loves you. Love is his motivation. And so we just look at the culture and go, forget it. It's over. They voted yesterday. The Electoral College, it's all over. No, it's not over. It's not over when the fat lady sings. It's over when God says it's over. And even then, it's not really over. But you know what I mean. So we live in this tension. How much do I invest in the here and the now? How much do I invest in America? How much do I hold on to what this country's been for over 230 years and quickly what it's becoming, which is not what it was designed to be? It's heartbreaking. And so, yes, we work hard to impact the culture. We work hard to fight injustice. Like, here's a great website, and we're trying to get Kevin Freeman on the show, everylegalvote.com. A lot of great information, a lot of easy ways for you to act. Over a million people already. I went on there. I signed up. I did the take action. I'm sent a bunch of letters to attorney generals around the country. I'm not going to go down without a fight. And whether my kids or your kids or our grandkids or anybody else in this culture understands that or not, I can tell you one person who does understand, and that's the God of the Bible. And so I'm not going down without a fight, because as this country denigrates itself and destroys itself, there's real human damage. And as the country becomes increasingly more secular and increasingly more sinful, I hear one of my ethics professors at Southeastern Baptist, I hear Dr. Heimbach in the background reminding me that the gospel is a moral solution to a moral problem. We need the gospel because of our immorality, which is our violation against God's law. So in a country like America, when you just push over the sanctity of life, you push over gender, you push over sexual ethics, you push over ethics, period. Like with an election process, and everything's fair game and might makes right, you eliminate any notion of objective truth and morality. So if everything's okay and everything's possible and everything's fine and nobody says anything and the emperor's got no clothes but nobody speaks up, then guess what? It gets to the point where it feels like there's no immorality. I'm not really doing anything wrong. Therefore, why do I need a gospel? Why do I need save? You Christians talk about, hey, are you saved? Saved from what? I'm doing just fine, thank you. It's not like I'm Donald Trump or something. I'm a decent person, blah, 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 blah. So you see yourself as not, you're like the rich person who's going to have a harder time getting into heaven than cramming a camel through the eye of a needle. And you're like, I don't really have any major problems. I don't need saving, which means I guess I don't need a savior. Can you hear the hiss of the snake? That's what's going on. That's what's behind it all. That's what's underneath it all, in it all, around it all. Until Jesus straightens it all out. Right? And that's why I got to shut down the church, because the church is supposed to be the moral conscience of the nation. We abdicated that largely back in 1935 through about 45 in this little country called Germany. We're abdicating it now. Bill Barr quit, right? Everybody's going ballistic about that. Here's what he said. Dear Mr. President, and I appreciate the opportunity to update you this afternoon on the department's review of voter fraud allegations and the 2020 election and how these allegations will continue to be pursued. At a time when the country is so deeply divided, it is incumbent on all levels of government and all agencies acting within their purview to do all we can to assure the integrity of elections and promote public confidence in their outcome. Sadly, this is me. I might be too late, but we have to try. I'm greatly honored that you called on me to serve your administration and the American people once again as Attorney General. I'm proud to have played a role in your many successes and unprecedented achievements you have delivered for the American people. Your record is all the more historic because you accomplished it in the face of relentless, implacable resistance. Your 2016 victory speech, in which you reached out to your opponents and called for working together for the benefit of the American people, was immediately met by a partisan onslaught against you in which no tactic, no matter how abusive and deceitful, was out of bounds. The nadir of this campaign was the effort to cripple, if not oust, your administration with frenzied and baseless accusations of collusion with Russia. Few could have weathered these attacks, much less forge ahead with a positive program for the country. You built the strongest and most resilient economy in American history, one that has brought unprecedented progress to those previously left out. You have restored American military strength by brokering historic peace deals in the Mideast. You have achieved what most thought impossible. You have curbed illegal immigration and enhanced the security of our nation's borders. You have advanced the rule of law by appointing a record number of judges committed to constitutional principles. With Operation Warp Speed, you delivered a vaccine for coronavirus on a schedule no one thought conceivable, a feat that will undoubtedly save millions of lives. During your administration, the Department of Justice has worked tirelessly to protect the public from violent crime, worked closely with leaders in Mexico to fight the drug cartels, cracked down on China's exploitation of our economy and workers, defended competition in the marketplace, especially the technology sector, and supported the men and women of law enforcement who selflessly and too often thanklessly risk their lives to keep our communities safe. As discussed, I will spend the next week wrapping up a few remaining matters important to the administration and depart on December 23rd. Wishing you, Melania, and your family a Merry Christmas and blessed holiday season. God bless. Sincerely, William Barr. You get to that third paragraph when he talks about all these different things. And if we lose the Senate on January 5th, you can just come up with a photo negative of that paragraph and reverse it all, because that's essentially what's going to happen. Which is why we pray, which is why we act, which is why you are called to try. To try. Because apathy for us is simply not an option. We'll be right back. 'Cause you are more. All right. Trying to be positive. Is it getting increasingly more difficult for you? I'm just kind of train of thought here today. A lot of different things I've been reading and looking at. Powell team asked the Supreme Court to review audit of Antrim County Dominion machines. But the judges in that case and people there in Michigan were like, okay, that was a human error, not Dominion. Of course, everybody's fighting over that. Judge allows release of Dominion audit report. Report claims system designed to create systemic fraud. Who did the audit? That's a group that Trump's folks are put together and got out there. So, of course, the other side is just going to dismiss that. It's more partisan hacking, but there's partisan hacking going on both sides. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Electoral College has spoken, he said. So he congratulated Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris on Tuesday morning for yesterday's Electoral College vote results. McConnell made the remarks during a speech on the Senate floor where he repeatedly highlighted and praised the numerous achievements of the Trump administration. And so he's just playing the game, right? Because he wants to stay in the game. And so if Trump's gone come mid-afternoon on January 20th, Mitch McConnell isn't, and he needs to try to preserve his position and his rank and his power. And there's a lot of status quo action going on up there, which is why I think most of them, including people in the Supreme Court, don't want to upset the apple cart too much. They had to upset it more than normal when Trump was the commander-in-chief and the head of the Republican Party. But assuming he's out on January 20th, then all the backbone's gone. Rhino goes back to being Rhino and rules the roost, and that's just what's going to happen. And who's going to pick up the flag after him, if not himself, in 2024? I don't know. Tim Scott? No, there's nobody out there with that kind of backbone. Now, there's nobody out there that would draw that kind of fire, as far as I can see. But, wow. So, again, how now shall we live? That's what keeps coming back to me. How now shall we live? We pray, we engage. That's why we mentioned the website, everylegalvote.com, where you can get information about what's going on with this election. And again, my primary concern is not Trump-Biden. My primary concern is the overall integrity of the U.S. election process. And if it's as bad as it certainly appears to be, then we don't have free and open elections, and we live in an oligarchy. We just haven't seen it completely take over yet. An oligarchy being a government run by a very small, powerful group of people. Is it a representative republic? Not when the elections, even at the federal level, can be rigged. It is not. Because who's winning and how do they win? And what difference did your vote make anyway? And you know what most people will do? They'll take the position of a lot of people that don't bother voting up to this point, who say my vote doesn't really matter. If your vote gets switched or discounted or somehow discarded, does your vote matter? No. And so what are most people going to do? Blow it off. Forget it. Why bother? I'm just going to do what I can. Take care of my family. And maybe if you're a Christian, maybe we double down on frontline kingdom things, evangelism, discipleship, so that we can evangelize more and try to impact the country around us. I mean, what did the first century church do? Second century, third century. What did they do? They had nothing. Roman's in charge. Nero's in charge. They're killing Christians right and left, blaming them for everything. And so when the plagues hit, the Roman centurions pulled the troops back and the Christians stayed to minister to people. Many of them die themselves, self-sacrificing for one another, for people outside the church, for people outside the way. And the church exploded. It only took about 300 years, 400 years. Constantine's like, okay, I can't beat them, join them. And the church saw explosive growth. And of course, because the explosive growth was being managed by mankind, and you get the Roman Catholic Church, and it doesn't matter whether you call it Roman Catholic or Southern Baptist or whatever, mankind's there, human depravity's there, concentration of power's there, and the sin nature is there, and you're going to get a problem, right? And so we continue to press forward, trying to fight the good fight of faith, trying to stand for truth and justice, realizing that eschatologically, you're polishing brass on a sinking ship. But polish we must, salt and light. You live out the gospel in all different manners of the way we live our lives, how we treat people in the store, how we try to take care of our employees, how we try to take care of other people and their businesses, how we care for the sick, how we care for the unborn, how we care for the elderly. Sorry, Governor Cuomo. And so we live in this tension. And it's frustrating to me. How now shall we live? Very frustrating. Okay, so what's going to happen? This was, of course, the New York Times. Can Congress overturn the Electoral College results? Probably not. And they're not far from the truth there. The Electoral College's certification on Monday of President-elect Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s victory left just one final venue for President Trump and his supporters to challenge the results. A joint session of Congress in January. Every 4 years, the House and Senate come together to formally tabulate the electoral votes and raise any final concerns about the results. Normally, it's a perfunctory confirmation of the Electoral College vote, but this year, some of the president's most strident supporters are threatening to transform it into a messy last stand by objecting to the results, which is legal, by the way. They're all but certain to fail, the New York Times says, but not before a potentially divisive spectacle on the floor of the House that could thrust Vice President Mike Pence into the politically perilous position of confirming that Mr. Trump has lost. Remember Al Gore? Remember 2000? Bush Gore, hanging chads, all that stuff? Al Gore was the vice president, therefore the president of the Senate, and he's the one that had to read the results of the Electoral College vote once it was certified and had to read the results as giving the election to George Bush. And there were a couple of objections, but they went nowhere. And that was what Al Gore had to do, preside over that. So you've got what's coming up on January 6th. Okay, this is how this plays out. They officially open the results from each state. The state's electors voted according to the vote tallies for their state. If the state, like here in North Carolina, goes to Trump, then the Republican electors are the ones that show up yesterday and voted. if the state goes to Biden, then those Democrat electors showed up. Now, in contested states, the Republicans met separately and voted their electoral college votes just as a way of kind of having that cemented. So if there's that door opens, they can come back to it. And then all that stuff gets sent up to Washington, D.C. And then a very formal matter on January 6th, they open them, these results, these elector votes from each state. They open them and read them. But as they read through them, alphabetically by state, you can object. Okay, you can object. Lawmakers can object to any state's results. But there's a high bar for rejection. Congress has long interpreted the constitutional language to mean that lawmakers can lodge objections to the results as they are tallied. The current process was circumscribed in the Electoral Count Act of 1887. Okay, this goes back a ways. It says that the tellers read through the electoral results state by state. Members of the House and Senate can submit objections in writing to a given state's results. The objections only hold weight if they are co-signed by at least one member of each chamber. If not, they fail and the session quickly moves on. That's what happened with Gore. Okay, they didn't have people from both chambers signing onto them. But somebody from, they want to object to Arizona, and you get a Republican in the House and a Republican in the Senate, and they lodge an objection. Okay. All right, now we have one. Now it's the real deal. Okay. It's not uncommon for a member of just one chamber to submit an objection as an act of protest. It happened in 2017. Several Democrats did that, objected to Mr. Trump's win in key states. But it went nowhere because it was only one side of Congress that person did. They got to have somebody sign on to that particular objection from both sides. Instances of a House member and a senator teaming up are more rare and last took place in 2005. If it occurred, the joint session would immediately pause so lawmakers could go back to their respective chambers to debate the objection for up to 2 hours. They would then vote on whether to toss out the electoral results of the state in question. Both chambers, listen, this is by law, both chambers would have to agree to reject the votes, something that has not happened since the Reconstruction era. Okay? So you have an objection from Republicans in the House and the Senate, just one in the House and one in the Senate over, let's say, Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania, they open up the envelope. Vice President Pence is presiding. He reads the electoral votes from Pennsylvania, which are all Democrats. And then, sir, we have an objection. It's signed by one member from the House and one member from the Senate. Okay, pause. The whole thing shuts down. And for up to 2 hours, Senate goes back its way, House goes its way, and they debate and they take a vote. So you know what's going to happen in the Senate, or what could happen, because the Republicans have enough votes there right now. But in the House, they don't. So there's no way in the House they're going to agree to any of these objections. So you have to have both the House and the Senate come back and go, yeah, you know what? We agree with this objection. And then literally by law, they could toss out the electors from that state. So if you had enough people in the House and enough people in the Senate to vote on each of these objections, let's say for five swing states, they could throw those five swing states out. Then all of a sudden, neither Trump nor Biden has 270 electoral college votes. And now it goes to the House of Representatives, where they don't vote every single person, by the way. It's one state, one vote. In which case, Donald Trump will win. He would have it because there's more people in the House, more states are controlled by Republicans than Democrats. And it's one state, one vote based on the majority in that state. And Donald Trump would win. But it's not going to get to that point. Because you're not going to get the House of Representatives to agree to any of these objections. Therefore, the objection on January 6th will not hold. I mean, they could take all day and do it, but it won't hold. And then Mike Pence will end up having to read that Joe Biden has surpassed the 270 Electoral College votes, albeit illegally or fraudulently. But I don't think there's enough people out there, including the U.S. Supreme Court, that are willing to plunge the nation into the mayhem that would occur if Donald Trump were to retain the presidency. I just don't think any of them have the guts to pay that price. But perhaps that's the only price that would be sufficient to turn this country back from the depths of its depravity and the darkness of the swamp and the concentration of power that's obviously taken place, not just in Washington, the halls of government, the halls of big business, the halls of liberal media. For what, ultimately? Because you got to kill God. You got to kill anything that represents the light and embrace the darkness until Jesus comes back and cleans it all up himself. In the meantime, we strive to answer that question, how now shall we live? This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll be back real soon. And like my father always used to say, ever forward.